It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running for this fifth day of April, 2021. This is the Horn Headon.live. It's where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you'd go if you'd like to, for instance, be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. Up and running, even as we speak, absolutely. Let's kill the sound effects real quick before anybody else can get in. Yeah, there we go. Anyway, if you pop on by the chat room, well, the early arrivers Anatole and Squeaky will happily greet you, and you will be capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, and capably assisted by pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Brother Bishop Steve from Georgistan. So we're all ready to get things rolling for this first full week of April. Yes. And every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude, you know that. And so thanks go out to our fifth, fourth, and third day of the month subscribers. That means thanks very kindly to Roberto and to Lauren out in far Alberta. Thank you to Kenda in Missouri. Thank you to Kevin in Colorado Springs. Thank you to Bernice, Batty Boop. Thank you to James in Illinois. Thank you all so kindly. Thank you to David. And thank you to Paul. And thanks as well to John and William. Thank you to Mick. Thank you to Stephen. And, thanks to all of you for being partial sponsors of the program and for helping to keep this program on the air over low these many years. In fact, I had a note from our pal Rico in DeBerg. Rico said, the Horn community is amazing. I just finished listening to Friday on the Front Porch. I continue to be amazed by the beauty and generosity of this community, as am I, Rico. I'm proud to be a small part of it. So proud. Love you, love you, love you like a rock, my sister, and I truly love everybody that supports you and helps keep progressive values alive and progressive broadcasting alive. And I will surely jump in whenever I can. Rico, signed Rico, glowing in the beauteous Berg. Oh, and it is beautiful when spring comes to DeBerg. It's, you know, the biggest, you know, in many ways, the biggest city in central Appalachia. And as I've said before, I have a special warm spot for Pittsburgh. I just love it. I do. And great people. Great town, great ethic, great views. Oh my heavenly days! That view of the very tip of the skyline of Pittsburgh when you pop out of the out of Mount Washington, out of the tunnels. The first time I ever saw it, it took my breath away, and I was like, I just wanted to stop the truck on the bridge and just go, damn! Instead, I kept driving for all I was worth because traffic was crazy, and still going, damn. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Rico. You're so, so very right. And thanks very kindly to our buddy, Stockton Larry. Yay, verily, the United States Postal Service Finally did get your have a show on me to the mailbox. I was able to pick it up today. Mm-hmm. And so that is much appreciated. Now let's see. Where do we begin this More In Monday? There. Mm-hmm. My way or the highway? Robin. On this day in 1887 in Tuscumbia, Alabama, I know it well, Annie Sullivan was successful in managing to have the deaf-mute Helen Keller, don't forget blind, spell the word water in Annie's hand. Well, that didn't take long. Jeffrey, just waiting, aren't you?
Yes, and on this day in 1973, White House counsel John Dean spelled out Watergate to the special prosecutor, Archibald Cox.
Well, that is very good, Jeffrey. That's worthy of an early jingle.
However, speaking of the deaf and dumb, what little I watched of the news this weekend figured Republicans, the likes of Moran Tate Reeves, that's Colonel Tate Reeves, Colonel Governor Tate Reeves, claiming that we just can't afford to run up more debt. Oh, dear Lord, baby Jesus, and oh, my stocks and dollars, we already have debt that our grandchildren can't not pay.
Yeah. Oh, the Morans you have always with you. And Jeffrey just nails it.
Hey, Cheapskate Tate, here's a monumental monetary message for you. Roll back the Trump, Bush, and Reagan tax cuts and just see how much the debt of the country can pay off after the wealthy start paying their taxes again. Oh, and by the way, a reeve is defined as a medieval English manor officer responsible for overseeing the discharge of feudal obligations.
Yes, in point of fact, we have a word we use to this day that involves that. The shire reeve. Shire reeve. Sheriff. Mm-hmm.
No, Taint Reeves, you are not medieval. You are totally evil, as people of your kind tend to always want to do a cracker crackdown on the poor, making certain the proletariat pay their taxes while allowing the bourgeoisie to go free. Don't worry, Taint. The middle class and Joe Biden are coming back, and they're going to get their... Wait for it. Yes, the proletariat and the middle class are on the move, and they're going to get some revenge. Speaking of Reagan, on March the 31st of 1987, the House voted overwhelmingly across party lines to override Reagan's veto of an $87.5 billion highway and mass transit bill. Jeffrey would like to have a little talk about a veto. Yes, and it was on this day in 1792 that George Washington cast his first veto in history. And ironically, Washington vetoed a highway and mass transit bill as well. Later, Washington was asked why he cast the veto for the infrastructure, and President Washington stated that he did it for practical reasons, considering, hell, there were no highways at the time. Besides, I did not want to appear to be self-aggrandizing for his upcoming new bridge in New York, you know, the George Washington Bridge, oh dear. Furthermore, General Washington added, had I allotted funds for my own personal eponymous bridge, the people would have accused me of, wait for it, the people would have accused me of cherry-picking my project. Oh, dear God, cherry-tree.
Some days with that giraffe. Of course, giraffes had 2 whole days just to bottle it all up. No, actually, Jeffrey, President Washington did offer up his first veto on this day in 1792. But the veto was cast for the rejection of a congressional measure for appointing representatives among the states. Meanwhile, back at the White House, back in our own time, Joe Biden, on the very same day, March 31st, that Reagan had his veto overridden 34 years ago. Yes, President Biden selected this auspicious date for unveiling his big infrastructure program, even if he did not realize it. Believe it or not, there was a time when there were actually some Republicans in the Senate that applied reason. Yeah, but those days are gone, as Mitch McConnell states his caucus will not render one vote for a new infrastructure plan. On the other hand, well, Jeffrey knows a little bit about highway maintenance.
I was just thinking, I wonder if the new Attorney General Merrick Garland could make a phone call to Mitch and maybe explain to the current Senate loser that you recently lost your high rank in the Senate, and it would be a real shame if your wife got lost somewhere in the federal prison system. Oh, but not to worry about seeing her, loser Mitch, because the feds will make sure she has a very nice and visible federal prison opportunity. Yes, Mitch, because the feds will make sure, well, the lovely Elaine Chao will have to go out every day and hold up a sign at one of the many highway venues under construction after the infrastructure bill passes with a sign simply saying, "No thanks to my miserable husband, but here, America, are your hard-earned tax dollars at work." And this has been Joey's Journal for More on Monday, the 5th day of April, 2021, with Giraffe preparing to ride the rails right here in the United States. Getting on a train, are you? Well, maybe we'll hear more about that later. And so there's a $10 Ride the Rails challenge to get us started this evening. Joey and Giraffe will double the first 10 bucks that comes in. And that'll get us down to 280 to go in fundraising for this evening so that we can stay fully funded, and it'll be exciting to see. So thank you, Joey, and thank you, Giraffe. Kyle, with an early note, shortly after noon, things got started early in the Kyle household today. Moran Monday nomination, says Kyle. My father's back at it again. He said, and I quote, do I do a funny voice for this, Kyle? You'll have to tell me if I can do a funny voice. I don't want to display any disrespect. But he said, and I quote, global warming is false because it was 37 degrees the other day here. I wish the people who knew nothing about science would stop spreading lies and conspiracies. Kyle adds only, help. Yeah, that was tough. I had a hard time reading that one the first time through, Kyle, because it just made me a little, made my brain hurt and made my liver quiver. The people who know nothing about science are the ones who are saying that climate change is happening. You know, the scientists. The 97% of scientists. How about that? 97% of scientists don't know what science is about. Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. And congratulations to the Stanford women's basketball team, winning their first national championship yesterday, somewhere in Texas, was it? It was one of the COVID states. And tonight, the men's national championship between Baylor and Gonzaga. Go Zags. You can't root for that Baptist school. Where in the Gospels does Jesus say, build me a gymnasium so kids can play hoops? Right. Hard by the lukewarm waters of the Brazos River. Yeah. But the disparity between the treatment of men's and women's athletics was in stark relief during this tournament, the NCAA getting stone cold busted for one of the players, I forget which school she came from, said, "Y'all, here's our weight room," and it was just a shabby, ribby little rack of dumbbells. Meanwhile, the men's weight room was just everything you could ever want, right? And the goodie bags for the men's and the NCAA had to scramble to say, "Oh, we sure made a mistake, didn't?" I don't know if it was a mistake. They just didn't give a damn. Mm-hmm. But anyway, Cynthia earlier said, here's an interesting thought. How many coaches can I name for women's or men's, for that matter, college basketball? For me, the answer is one. Tara Vanderveer for the Stanford women's team. I've not been able to even see a single game they played, but the news spots on them have been thrilling. That team plays with as much skill and thrill as I've ever seen in the NBA. They aren't just good, they're great. And with their win yesterday over Arizona, they're the best, too. I just have to celebrate them, and while I generally prefer Cal over Stanford, go Stanford. It's great. It's great basketball. And, well, maybe we're finally getting to a point where the NCAA is paying attention. The NCAA is paying attention, I suspect, on a number of fronts now. Big news out of Arkansas today. Governor Asa Hutchinson, shocked, I tell you, shocked the mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing members of his party from the Arkansas legislature, and vetoed anti-trans legislation. It was huge and surprising. One wonders if maybe the NCAA gave him a call and said, won't be any tournaments in your place. Mm-mm, not if that bill passes. Oh, no, sorry, just won't be. And so now, the Arkansas legislature will have to see if they if they've got the votes and the nerve to try to override this anti-trans medical bill, because it would have allowed medical services to be denied by anyone, any healthcare provider, any healthcare worker whatsoever, based on whether somebody was gay, trans, what have you. Just say no. And one wonders how much, I don't know what the constitutional structure is in Arkansas, but I wonder if the legislature feels froggy enough to try to override that veto and buy Arkansas a shit ton of lawyer bills. Yeah. Among other things, the veto means that care for trans youths, trans kids, is not banned in Arkansas. And he said that if the bill had become law, it would have interfered with physicians and parents as they deal with some of the most complex and sensitive matters involving young people. Yeah, now if he only felt that way about women's reproductive systems, we'd be, yeah, Arkansas could be working toward the 20th century. Doctors would have been prevented from giving transgender kids things like puberty blockers, transition-related surgeries, hormones, most of which are not given to kids anyway, but the puberty blockers are. It's a surprising win, but here's the bad news. I just got the answer to the question I posed a moment ago. It only takes a simple majority to override a governor's veto in Arkansas. And so they will override this. This will become law. But Hutchinson added as governor, I'm hopeful that my action will cause conservative Republican legislators to think through the issue again and hopefully come up with a more restrained approach. And what he said about it in the long run, and I mean, this is good news, sort of. It means that Asa Hutchinson can maybe learn a little bit. He said the bill's overbroad, extreme, and does not grandfather those young people who are currently under hormone treatment. The young people who are currently under a doctor's care will be without treatment when this law goes into effect. That means they'll be looking to the black market or go out of state to find the treatment that they want and need. This is not the right path to put them on. Yeah. And it will be challenged in court, according to the American Civil Liberties Union and Chase Strangio, the deputy director for transgender justice at the ACLU. He said earlier today, I'm crying. It'll be hard to sustain this, but so meaningful. Thank you to everyone who called, emailed, tweeted Governor Hutchinson. This is a powerful rebuke of this nightmare legislation. And bear in mind, this and the legislation in Alabama that's barreling toward the governor's desk as well. It's been roundly denounced by the American Academy of Pediatrics, the Endocrine Society. They've long been in support of letting trans kids who have been thoroughly examined and diagnosed and therapeutic, therapized, counseled, to have puberty blockers once they get started, or once they're allowed to get started after they've been through all the hoop jumping and gatekeeping and, you know, flaming barbed wire hoops that are involved. The American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry is also on board. Yeah. The data are strong. Young people on puberty blockers, well, transgender young people, had lower rates of depression and anxiety. They just functioned better all the way around. And it was, it's life-saving. Pediatricians in Arkansas said, no, this is wrong. Noting that Lee Beers from the American Academy of Pediatrics said it puts politicians rather than pediatricians in charge of a child's medical care. It also overrides the parental role. Nonetheless, a different Robin in this case. Oh, hi, I'm Robin. Representative Robin Lundstrom. Picked up on Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, claim that it's genital mutilation for a person to have gender-confirming surgery, which isn't being done on kids in the first place. She said, and she's probably a TERF anyway, this is about protecting minors. Many of you, I would hazard to guess, did things under 18 you probably shouldn't have done. Why would we ever consider allowing a sex change for a minor? Well, see, that's the thing. Gender confirmation surgery doesn't happen for people under 18. But if you get to 18 and you haven't, and you're trans and you haven't had puberty blockers, you are going to have a hell of a time overcoming all of that. So, you know, the bigotry, it continues. I'll notice that Representative Robin Lundstrom has not sponsored any legislation to take away a child's right to quit high school, which is a horrible life-altering decision. Nope. And I don't know. Haley, has the age of consent been raised in Arkansas? Yeah. I'll bet not. But brooga, 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 trans people, brooga, brooga. Right? That's what the, yeah. Bigot, 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 bigot. Asa Hutchinson's veto. Well, this is, Stephen, New York points out, what it really means is that Governor Mike Huckabee's daughter, you know, Sarah Hustlebuck Sandbags, is now the gubernatorial frontrunner in Arkansas. Speaking of whom, oh, Jesus. former governor presidential candidate, pastor, brother, diabetes, snake oil cure salesman, Mike Huckabee, said, I think on Twitter, maybe Facebook, social media, what the hell? And because it's more in Monday, we really ought to have the Calliope music going for this. Mike Hustlebuck declared that he is going to start identifying as Chinese or Asian. I think he said Chinese. Surprised he didn't use some sort of nasty ethnic epithet, but he didn't. No, he said he's going to start identifying Chinese. He said, then Coke will like me and Pepsi will like me and Nike will like me. Major League Baseball will like me. Ain't America grand? And one of my legislative heroes, Ted Lieu. Man, did he clap back. Wow. He said, Coke likes me. Pepsi likes me. Nike likes me. I wear Nike shoes. My hometown L.A. Dodgers won the World Series, but it's not because I'm Asian or Chinese. It's because I'm not a shithead, Mike. Yeah. That was awesome. Because you got to push back against these bigoted turds. They're just awful. Hey, thank you, Darlene. Darlene answered Joey and Giraffe's challenge, the Ride the Rails challenge. So, hey, we've only got $280 in fundraising to go, and we'll be good for the first day of the first full week of April. Yeah. Thank you, Darlene. Thank you, Joey and Giraffe. I had a lovely weekend. It really was. It was nice. I went over and helped out with a fundraiser for the County Humane Society, who got screwed by the county government and are now in a life and death struggle to survive. For 6 years now, that Humane Society has been a no-kill shelter, and they work tirelessly, and they do a good job. And so all the awesome little businesses in town have sort of banded together, collecting cat food, dog food, puppy pads, chew toys, all kinds of things for the little fur babies in the care of the Humane Society. And so on Saturday, there was a hot dog sale across the river. And my friends had gotten themselves a brand new Blackstone griddle. And having worked with one for a couple of years now, I volunteered to go over and season it for them, get a nice, pretty hillbilly Teflon nonstick coating going on it. And I stayed and cooked a few hundred hot dogs. And it was just a wonderful time. Perfect blue sky, not at all too hot, not too cold. All you needed was a light jacket. That's one of our favorite movie lines. From Miss Congeniality, when Miss Rhode Island gets asked to describe your perfect date. Well, I'd say about May 24th. Oh, it's not too hot, not too cold. All you need is a light jacket. Yeah. But it was so much fun. People showed up and donated to the Humane Society, and there were several different types of hot dogs, and my life has changed forever. In a year that's seen a lot of changes, and seeing them still going on. No, my life changed forever on Saturday because I tasted something I had never tasted before in my life, and the food porn contingent of the Horn Family Community Congregation is going to go just wild at the thought. One of the folks around here has developed a recipe for and makes and cans ramp pesto. Oh my God. So there were ramp pesto dogs, a little stripe of mustard and a little stripe of ramp pesto. The hot dog, the toasted bun, bang. But I swear I would eat that ramp pesto. Hell, I might even put it on ice cream. It is that good. And I have no idea what the recipe was. I'm going to have to try to figure it out for myself. I don't know if there were any pine nuts in it. Tasted like there were. I think there was some Parmesan. And the ramps were just so flavorful and mild. It's really hard to get ramps to be mild. But, oh, my heavenly days, was this wonderful. And just as a thank you, they gave me a little jar of it. And I'm gonna ration that out like Ocetra caviar. For my money, it tastes better than Ocetra caviar. But, yeah. Mighty good, and the day was even better. And they raised, God, I think they sold 500 hot dogs. And then I did something else. I brought some packages of Kaneka over, because at least in these parts, I'm the apostle of Kaneka sausage. Sprite. This is my first diet pop in forever. I just had a hankering. Diet Sprite. Unpaid product placement. But seeing people interacting, socially distanced, wearing masks, doing all the right things, but being out together-ish under blue Appalachian skies, with the sun beaming down, was nothing if not magic. and doing it all for a very, very good cause. But yeah, I took six packages of Kaneka over. It was well received. People are, where'd you get this? Where'd you get this? There's only one place in West Virginia you can get it. The Wiggling Pig. And so I have a feeling my pal there is going to see his Kaneka sales go through the roof. Mm-mm-mm. And so there were a couple of packages left, and I think they're going to be, they're going to set up a feed for the, a little buffet table for the basketball game tonight. I won't be able to go, but they're going to be serving up the official Robin Kaneka dog. It's been named, and it's grilled Kaneka with a little warm marinara and some grilled green onions and peppers and mushrooms, and topped with Parmesan cheese. And damn, I'm hungry now. With regard to the ramp pesto, Steve says two things. Ramp pesto, I suspect it will dissolve a nail. You kidding? It'll make a nail get up and run and run away. But as long as everybody's eating it, everybody's okay. It's kind of like garlic that way. And it's kin to garlic. Steve knows Friday on the front porch was some hustler level food porn. It was great. I thought Roger and you were on fire. Oh, Roger and I do get, when we get going on the food porn, it's like when Todd and I get going. It's really, really hunger-inducing. And I keep thinking, you know, we got to figure out a way to do the horn in now. I like the idea of doing it in late October. I think that would be great. Going back to Kyle's dad, Lee in New York says, he's an expert at reading a thermometer. That's all the science he needs to know. He's also aware that you don't have to be a weather forecaster to know which way the wind's blowing. Bob Dylan is not a weatherman either. The Bob Dylan reference gets a cowbell for Lee. What are you wondering? Ah, well, this should be fun. Lamar the Magnificent says, I'm wondering, when Trump is jailed, will that stop his punk ass from trying to be the face, the fat cheese puff face? I use cheese puff because I like Cheetos. Did I say I dislike Trump? Seeing Trump and all his bullshit, I wonder as well, will his followers learn that Trump only likes their money and can't stand seeing them, period? P.S. Friday through Easter, I had my own Steve moment. The bumper on my BMW blew off on the freeway at a speed of 90-plus miles an hour. That's not supposed to happen to BMWs. The following day, my dog spit up on my office rug. There went dinner in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. The next day, my dog shit in the office. The kitchen drains backed up. Yeah, call the guy. Call them Saturday. He said he'd be here Monday because he's out of town. And finally, I found out that one of my dogs snore loud. That's a hell of a weekend, Silent R. I think I had the better one. Yeah, I'm pretty sure I had the better one. Mm-hmm. Lee responded to Mike Huckstrebee's I'm going to identify as Chinese. Lee said, I've decided to identify as Vulcan. The Romulans will like me. The Federation will agree with my values, and I'll probably get a tricorder and a communicator to stay in touch with my away teams. Isn't Star Trek great? But my favorite, I'm going to identify as, because that's a thing now, is the meme that I saw that said, if these damn Republicans don't leave my trans friends alone, I'm going to identify as a fucking problem. Oh, very good. Very good. Let's see. Speaking of Nitwit Nero and being a crook, interesting story broke over the weekend. It turned out that the Trump grift, and this is from the New York Times, otherwise known as the Trump campaign, set up a little bit of a sketchy hustle. You know, we talk about how we need subscribers here, and we do, because it makes the a la carte part a little less stressful. We always need new subscribers, and new subscribers get thanked at the beginning of every program. And from time to time, I say, look, you know, if you'd like to become a subscriber, there's a little box at the interface that you just click the box, and it says make this a recurring donation. And that's as straightforward as we know how to be. And it's the right way to be. Naturally, that is not the way that the Trump campaign ran things. They conned their poor little maggot supporters by turning one-time donations into subscriptions, monthlies. And even people who wanted to contribute were pissed, because it turned out they kept getting hit and hit and hit and hit month by month by month. Well, they set it up so that the boxes were pre-checked. That was the default was a subscription. You don't do that. And so he started running low on cash, COVID Caligula did, back in September. And, that's when the box got pre-checked. The article notes a particular case. Stacey Blatt was in hospice care last September, listening to Rush Limbaugh. You know, he's still dead. His dire warnings about how badly Donald J. Trump's campaign needed money when he went online and chipped in everything he could. $500. It was a big sum for a 63-year-old battling cancer and living in Kansas City on less than $1,000 a month. But that single contribution, federal records show it was his first ever, quickly multiplied. Another $500 was withdrawn the next day, then $500 the next week, and every week through mid-October without his knowledge, until Mr. Blatt's bank account had been depleted and frozen. When his utility and rent payments bounced, he called his brother for help. What the Blatts soon discovered was $3,000 in withdrawals by the Trump campaign in less than 30 days. They called their bank and said they thought they were victims of fraud. It felt, his brother Russell said, like it was a scam. Well, Mr. Blatt, that's because it was tied up with Donald J. Trump, who is a con artist. And it went on and on and on like this. There were others. A 78-year-old Californian who made a $990 online donation to Trump in early September. And they hit him seven more times for almost $8,000. Victor Amelino said, I'm retired. I can't afford to pay all that damn money. Yeah. Jesus. There's, of course, the question of sympathy. How sad do you... I mean, hospice? Really? But... Didn't they know they were giving to Trump? Oh, wait, they believed in him. Wait, oh, yeah, that's right. He was their god emperor. Mm-hmm. So it's still slimy. Of course he fleeced his own supporters. That's what one does to sheep. One fleeces them. Sitting around there in their matching Barca loungers listening to Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, Newsmuck, Onan, the network that spills its news upon the ground, listening to them talk about how America will fail, everything will die if Donald Trump does not become president, or if he's not reelected president. Yeah. So, you know, Lamar the Magnificent's question is well put. Yeah. Will his followers learn that Trump only likes their money and can't stand seeing them, period? I think some of them might be, figuring it out. You think maybe, kind of, sort of? Yeah. Oh, and since we are talking about morons, you know that the Senate will be taking up the voting rights bill, H.R. 1. And I'm proud to say that every Democrat in the Senate, and, of course, Independents Angus King and Bernie Sanders, have signed on to co-sponsor the bill in an attempt to drag the ability to vote into the 21st century. Yeah, wait. I misspoke. Almost every member of the Senate of the United States has signed on as a co-sponsor. Almost. All but one of the Democratic members of the Senate of the United States have signed on as co-sponsors. You already know, don't you? Yeah. Because of course it was. Joe Manchin. Mm-hmm. Joe Manchin has not signed on as a co-sponsor. Now, this does not mean he would vote against it, but it ain't bipartisan, so he won't sign on. Right. Disgusting. Who's surprised? Nobody. But you got to give Joe Manchin credit. Because he knows his conservative, right-wing constituency here. Because I freely admit that I and other liberals, progressives in West Virginia, we are outliers. We are also probably statistically irrelevant. Mm-hmm. And too much of this state, thinks that making voting easier, making it easier to exercise one's constitutional right. Well, Joe knows. He knows for a fact how far too many West Virginians think. And instead of leading them, he does their dirty work for them. Yeah. Of course, that's not all Joe's done lately to fuck America and his own state. Yeah, because Joe doesn't like the corporate tax increase that President Biden wants to use to fund a $2 trillion infrastructure bill. Yeah, Joe says, it could hurt American competitiveness. Horseshit. Most of the corporations in this country, the really big ones, pay a net zero in taxes. Now, let's remember, they're citizens. They're corporate citizens. They're corporate persons. Right? They're immortal, mind you. But they are corporate persons. Yeah. Corporations are people, my friend. Human beings. Just ask Bishop Willard Romney. So that's two, I guess. Yeah. Today, Joe Manchin went on the right-wing blather here in this state, the statewide talk line. Oh, my, what a creative name. And talking to veteran West Virginia broadcaster Hoppy Kirchival, full-grown man still calling himself Hoppy. He said, as the bill exists today, it needs to be changed. We have to pay for it. We can't continue to throw caution to the wind. And both sides, the Republicans and the Democrats, have been irresponsible in the financial responsibilities that we have for our country and future generations. Horse shit, Joe. Horse shit. Democrats didn't give a $1.9 trillion tax cut to American business. That was Republicans. Democrats didn't destroy the surplus back in the end of the 90s and say, I'm going to give you $300. It's your money. Republicans did that. Because, well, that's the only reason that Republicans want to be in government for the most part. And, well, I mean, they like to shit on marginalized communities, too. That's a big thing with them. But they exist to make sure that things like corporate persons don't pay the kinds of taxes that flesh and blood persons do. And Joe don't like no tax cut because Joe's a fucking millionaire. Well, you know, I think corporate taxes should never have been below 25%. And that's the worldwide average, and that's basically what every corporation would have told you. That's what they thought was fair. Bullshit! This whole thing here has got to change to the point where we're starting to look at how do we rebuild America and continue to take care of our deferred maintenance. I think corporate should have been 25%. There's six or seven other Democrats who feel very strongly about this. Well, I bet I know their names. We have to be competitive, and we're not going to throw caution to the wind. The bill's not going anywhere if I don't vote for it. Somebody realizes that he has been given the veto power over the entire American people, and he intends to use it. For instance, by way of trying to get his cooperation, I mean, it looks kind of quid pro quo to me. I'm sorry, I'm not dumping on the Biden administration, but yeah, come on. President Biden has nominated Gail Manchin. Recognize the last name? That's Joe's wife. To be the co-chair of the Appalachian Regional Commission. And the Appalachian Regional Commission, in turn, gets a shit ton of money to try to make things a little bit better here in this little benighted, blasted, poisoned, dug, gouged, scraped region of the country. So you can damned well guess who ain't going to be getting any Appalachian Regional Commission money. And bear in mind, he keeps talking about 25%. The Biden administration's only talking about raising the corporate tax rate to 28. but he's quibbling over 3%. Yeah, it's disgusting. But you can bet the cronies are lining up because, you know, Joe Manchin, I don't care who's governor. Joe Manchin runs the state, plain and simple. And so if you're not a friend of Joe, you ain't going to go. Your project's not going to go. And that's what organizations like Cold River Mountain Watch have been dealing with for 20 years or so. That's why, you know, that's why I ask the members of this community to go to smile.amazon.com and nominate Cold River Mountain Watch as the recipient of your donor dollars when you make Amazon purchases. This is not an ad for Amazon. But, you know, some teeny tiny portion of the proceeds, when you do that, you know, it's like a penny or a 1% or something of your purchase price goes to a designated philanthropy, a charitable organization. Cold River Mountain Watch is registered there. And so Cold River Mountain Watch scrapes and scrambles and struggles to stay alive so that Cold River Mountain Watch can do the hard work of trying to save this state, not because of, but in spite of, people like Joe Manchin and his cronies. Mm-hmm. It gets frustrating. It does. As to corporate personhood, Lee in New York points out, as a carbon-based life form, I have an alternate minimum tax. Corporate persons should have that, too. It just had, and I think it was Bernie that tweeted earlier the tax rate for a number of American corporations. Let me see if I can dredge that up. Working. Yeah, he kind of went off on a bit of a tear. A pair of Nike Air Max 270s costs $150. The Dish Network Basic Package costs $64.99. A FedEx large box delivery is $20. Zoom Pro monthly membership is $14.99. On the other hand, federal income taxes paid in 2020, Nike, $0, Dish Network, $0, FedEx, $0, Zoom, $0. Yes, Bernie or his social media person said, we must end our rigged tax code. 3 straight years, FedEx has not paid a penny in taxes. But they've made billions in profits. If you paid $120 for a pair of Nike Air Force One shoes, you paid more to Nike than it paid in federal income taxes over the past 3 years. While it made $4.1 billion, and Phil Knight, their founder, became over $23 billion richer. Mm-hmm. Kind of puts it in perspective, doesn't it? And so, it was pointed out that this is also the anniversary of the assassination. Well, it was yesterday. April 4th, at the Lorraine Motel in Memphis, Tennessee, 6:01 Central Standard Time, He died at 7.05 p.m. having been murdered by a sniper with a rifle. And that now iconic photograph of the people who were with him pointing in the direction from which the shots came as he lay on the ground. And he was there in Memphis, recall, for a sanitation worker strike. He was there to support the rights of working people to a decent wage. And we are still fighting that same damned fight today. Again, with the perspective. That was a labor struggle. And it was only the night before, in an address he gave on April the 3rd, when he talked about maybe not making it. Things had gotten awfully hot. And he knew that there was a price, at least philosophical, if not actually fungible, on his head. And so, as we talk about things like an infrastructure bill and raising taxes on the on corporations, well, there's Senator Roger Wicker of Muzlipistan, who for some reason or another was booked on Meet the Press and said, how could the president expect to have bipartisanship when his proposal is a repeal of one of our signature issues in 2017 when we gave away the entire gall dang United States National Treasury to people like Nike, to American corporations? So, it'll probably go through on reconciliation, budget reconciliation. And once again, all the Republicans, every last goddamn one of them, will stand in opposition and on the wrong side of history. But now we gotta get Joe on board. You're probably sick of the Joe Manchin stories. So am I. So am I. Competitiveness, please. We're not going to become uncompetitive if some persons start paying their fair share. Competitiveness. Pete Buttigieg, on the other hand, also was on Meet the Press. He said, we're just asking corporations to pay their fair share at a rate that would be lower than it's been for most of my life. And remember, Nike, please, FedEx, please, they have armies of accountants, phalanges of accountants, who are measuring pennies down to the 32nd damn decimal place, like calculating pi, to make sure that they enjoy the largesse of this country without paying a penny or even a 32nd decimal place of a penny for it. Because when you think about it, most of what goes into us being us, that is the United States of America, is for the benefit of American corporations. Highways, the interstate system was begun, developed under Dwight Eisenhower, and continues to this day And it was done under the aegis of the National Military Defense Highway System. And there's a lot of urban legend and urban myth that swirls around that. But in the long run, what it does is it supports corporate America. The highway system supports corporations that don't pay any fucking taxes. Yeah. And it's mind-numbing to ponder. As far back as the 1930s, General Smedley Butler, twice decorated with the Congressional Medal of Honor, said that he came to the conclusion that he was nothing more than a knee breaker, an enforcer for United Fruit. He figured that out during his days putting down workers. And I don't mean by, oh, you people are so poor. Not putting them down like that. I mean, sending in American troops to break up strikes, make sure that any effort toward popular government, popular sovereignty, self-determination, never got off the ground. Kill it, as Bob Marley wrote, before it grows. And it all took shape when Smedley Butler wrote, "War is a racket." So the bloated Pentagon budget exists to protect American businesses. That takes nothing away from the people who volunteer to serve their country. They probably figure it out faster than most others do. It's frustrating. Clean water? Well, that's far more for the benefit of industry than it is for people who would just not like to be poisoned. We figured that out to our horror in 2014 with the Freedom disaster, when clean drinking water for over 300,000 people in the state in 9 counties was put at hazard for the sake of a corporation that was making and storing a vicious poison to make life better for who? West Virginians? No, the coal industry. Because, of course. And now down in Florida, because, well, you wouldn't want to be giving corporations a sad by making them. So you just let the crisis unfold and unfold and unfold. Manatee County, Florida, where workers are feverishly using pumps and vacuum trucks because a wastewater reservoir is leaking with the potential to create a 20-foot wall of water. Oh, my God, where have I heard that before? Oh, wait, it wasn't 20 feet. It's more like 60. Mm-hmm. Sorry, looking at a note from Dave number 11. I'll share it with you in a minute. No, we've had leaking dams made of dirt and rock here in West Virginia for decades. And the dams hold back billions of gallons of toxic waste from mountaintop removal and underground mining operations. And we know that when one in particular, the Brushy Fork impoundment, breaks, it'll send a wall of water somewhere between 40 and 60 feet high down the Coal River Valley through an area that doesn't have any buildings that are 6 stories tall. And the mountains are so damn steep, it'll be impossible to run up them. With a wall of toxic waste 60 feet high coming at you. First thing that'll be hit there is our state police barracks and our Head Start Center. Yeah. Well, something similar is going on in Florida in Manatee County. Piney Point, a phosphate plant that has long been abandoned in the Tampa Bay area. And just last month, they kind of happened to notice that, it was leaking. And the pressure on the liner is arguably too much to bear. 300 homes and businesses in the immediate area have already been evacuated. The nominal governor of Florida, the racist adjacent, white supremacist adjacent, Ron Monkey Up DeSantis, who was only elected governor with the help of real live, no kidding, Nazis. Well, Ron Monkey Up DeSantis said, "What we're looking at now is trying to prevent and respond to, if need be, a real catastrophic flood situation." Pay attention to the language. What we're looking at now, looking at, observing, which is dramatically different than doing, prevent and respond to if need be. So they haven't even decided if they need to respond to a real catastrophic flood situation. This thing has the potential to put the failure back in the 1970s, I think 1972, of an earthen dam holding a couple of tens of millions of gallons of toxic waste here in West Virginia. It failed, killed a couple of hundred people, displaced a few thousand. Buffalo Creek disaster. Coal mine, of course. Agnes had family there. Came after torrential downpours in 1972. Ron Monkey Up DeSantis has declared a state of emergency for Manatee County. Gave a press briefing yesterday. And then today, officials, that's just how they're identified, officials said that they flew a drone over it, and hey, they may have found another leak. And, you don't think of Florida and West Virginia in the same breath. Florida is really flat, and West Virginia isn't. But Florida has been remorselessly mined for things like phosphates. And the phosphates were dug for the purpose of making fertilizer. And the fertilizer plant has been shut down for ages. And the U.S. EPA, I'm sure unwelcome, has sent down an on-scene coordinator. The Army Corps of Engineers, who could fuck up a one-car parade, they've been sent down. We've got a history here with the Army Corps of Engineers. There's not a lot of trust. If you want other witnesses, you can chat with folks who live in and around the greater New Orleans area about their opinion of the Army Corps of Engineers. But imagine, okay, this Piney Point plant, Piney Point phosphate plant, has been shut down for 20 years. And 20 years on, with the company long damn gone, those storage ponds, pond my ass, those inland seas of toxic waste are still there. You know, because we wouldn't want no job-killing regulations to get in the way of just leaving a bunch of toxic waste laying around now, would we? Yeah. And HRK Holdings owns the impoundments now. And they just keep dumping polluted water into it, including stacks of what is called phosphogypsum. Yeah. Guess what? Phosphogypsum? It emits radioactive gas. Well, of course it does. I wonder how sick the people who live in and around that godforsaken nightmare toxic waste plant in Manatee County are. I wonder how much more elevated the cancer deaths are. Birth defects. Because these are all things that we've learned the hard way in West Virginia. And so, at the urging of engineers, Ron Monkey Up DeClantis said they began a controlled release of 35 million gallons per day. Where is it going, these 35 million gallons? Really, where? Oh, you know, don't you? They're pumping it out of the toxic waste ponds and pumping it into Tampa Bay. Because, you know, that's what the ocean is. I mean, it's not a living, breathing ecosystem that harbors all manner of amazing and sustaining life. It's just a toilet for capitalist industrialists to shit in. Because money! Holy profit. And so the Florida National Guards brought in extra pumps to pump more water, more toxic waste into Tampa Bay. And of course, some of that shit will settle to the floor of Tampa Bay. Others will be carried on the tide out into the Gulf of Mexico. And, well, it's a circulating system, the oceans of this watery planet are. And who knows where it'll go, what it'll poison. The reservoir, the impoundment, the toxic waste inland sea, has about 480 million gallons in it, in the area that is under threat. They pumped it down to about 300 million. So 180 million gallons of toxic waste have gone into Tampa Bay. Yay! But don't worry, you can trust Ron Monkey Up DeClantis. No, you can't. And he says, well, we're not... How are we supposed to be reassured? Oh, my God, if you lived in Manatee County. And how many people living in Manatee County said, you know what, I'm going to go vote for that Ron DeClantis. Seems like a good white man. Wearying. Yeah. But Ron Monkey Up DeClantis said, no, at least it's not radioactive. At least it's not radioactive. What an advertising. Welcome to Florida. At least the water isn't radioactive.
dot, yet.
And the Florida Department of Environmental Protection is monitoring the water to capture any environmental impact. Again, according to Ron Monkey up DeKlantis. Lying through his teeth, he said, public health and safety is the priority. Obviously, we want to protect that in a way that minimizes any of the environmental impact. But the goal is to ensure the integrity of the stack system as quickly as possible in order to minimize impacts to local residents to prevent an uncontrolled discharge. So in other words, it ain't going anywhere. And HHK or HRK, whatever holdings, after they get it fixed, will probably just keep dumping more poison in it and lather, rinse, repeat. How would you like to see an evacuation order? Nobody wants to see an evacuation order. But how would you like to see one that says, collapse of Piney Point stack imminent? Because that's what the people who live nearby are being told. Don't you know that thing just smells just lovely? What makes me think that if I was to look this up on Google Earth, I wouldn't see too many gated McMansion communities around Piney Point? What is that, a Piney Point? Is that a pledge pin? No, no McMansions. What is nearby, however, is the Manatee County Jail, where people, and you don't want to be incarcerated in Florida. You don't want to be incarcerated anywhere in America. But that's where Manatee County sends the people who run afoul of its criminal laws, many of which are designed to simply punish people for being, well, poor, uneducated, and doing things as a result thereof that get them into hot water with the authorities and then get them sent to the Manatee County Jail. Well, it just happens to sit by a toxic waste dump. Just because it's wet doesn't mean it's not a toxic waste dump. Did they move the inmates? No. Of course they didn't move the inmates. They're dangerous criminals. And some of them are. All personnel and residents have been moved to the top floor of the two-story facility, putting them well over 10 feet above base level. Oh, wait. Inmates have been safely transported to a nearby undisclosed location. You know, if they won't tell you where the inmates were taken to, it's a pretty good bet it's not a good place. Nearby? Hell. Maybe they just sat him at the foot of the fucking failing impoundment. And it's gone on for a long damn time. It's not like this problem just cropped up. You've got Republican governance in Florida, so that means it's been a problem for ages that they just ignored. Well, you know, I mean, we wouldn't want to upset our fine corporate backers there at H whatever it is, the holding company. You got any idea how much money they give us? Yeah. On the other hand, Nikki Fried, who runs is the Commissioner of Agriculture and Consumer Services in Florida, said that Piney Point is Piney Point because the result of decades of ignoring science and scientists. Is that person elected? Because if they're elected, well, there will be a concerted effort to make sure nothing like that ever gets said again. What Freed said was, for more than 50 years, this Central Florida mining operation has caused numerous human health and environmental disasters and incidents, including evacuations from sulfuric acid leaks, deaths of multiple employees, the release of more than a billion gallons of contaminated wastewater, and ongoing regular gypsum stack and reservoir leaks from poor construction and maintenance that released heavy metals and pollutants into the region's water and soil. It could have been resolved over two decades ago. Mm-hmm. But they didn't. Just like we don't resolve the problems of the toxic waste impoundments in Central Appalachia. Because there's no money in it. You can't raise taxes on the taxpayers to take care of it. Not their fault. Yeah, maybe the federal government will come in. Maybe the tax, yeah, the federal government will come in and clean it up. Jesus. They're not, these aren't accidents. I mean, if this thing completely collapses, it'll be called an accident, it'll be called a disaster. But how do you call something like this an accident when you've watched it unfold for a half a century? Yeah. Oh, and when that shit that's not radioactive gets out into the Gulf, they cause algal blooms. And they cause red tides. Nasty things that have been on the uptick in the Gulf for quite a while now. You may have seen the pictures from a couple of years ago, the red tides. They're disgusting. Toxic. But don't worry. U.S. Representative Vern Buchanan, a Republican from Florida. Of course he's a Republican. Well, he showed up at a press conference today. And he said he got flown over it by helicopter, and he said he was concerned. Oh, he's very concerned. There's much. Somebody probably gave him a set of pearls just so he could clutch them. And he's wrung his hands several times and harumphed stentorianly, noting that the water that he saw spewing out looked pretty contaminated to me. And said that based upon the currents of the water, that the whole region was probably impacted, not just Manatee County. Do you get as weary of this as I do? It's one thing when an act of simple negligence, you know, simple negligence is generally defined as doing or not doing that thing which the ordinary, reasonable, prudent person would have done or not done. Sounds a little convoluted, but if anybody else in their right mind wouldn't have done something, they shouldn't have, you know, the negligent party shouldn't have either. It's kind of a, you know, it's a mistake. Oops. This isn't that. This is a monumental act of decade. People have lived and died in the course of time, worked for the companies, worked in state governments. Said, well, ain't nothing we can do about it. Yeah, I don't reckon we're going to have to do anything. It don't look like much of a problem. I mean, you know, we let loose a billion gallons of toxic wastewater, but I mean, goddamn, that just happens, don't it? Sorry about the cornpone accent, but it's not hard to imagine that someone was, yes. Yeah. But the light has finally gone on the state level, with the Department of Environmental Protection Secretary Noah Valenstein issuing a statement saying, It is clear that this facility must be closed. And we in the Department of Environmental Protection will hold the company accountable through enforcement action.
Got any Florida lawyers in the Horn Family Community Congregation? Anybody who could tell us what an enforcement action looks like in Florida? Because I know what they look like here, and hell, they're hardly an inconvenience. Over across the border in our sister state, the Commonwealth of Virginia, in a little town called Appalachia, Virginia, which wasn't much of a town at all. This was several years ago now, when they were blowing the living bejesus out of a mountain there. And I think the little fellow's name was Jeremy Davidson. Jeremy was 4 years old, and his mama had put him to bed in his little boy bed, toddler bed. The house had gone dark and shut down for the night. And in the dark and still of that night, a boulder, huge, that had been made unstable by the work of the mountaintop removers there, got loose and became intimate with gravity. And it bounded and it rolled and it bowled and bumped and thumped until it took flight and landed right smack dab on top of little Jeremy Davidson, asleep in his bed. For that egregious act of gross, willful, wanton, reckless conduct, the Commonwealth of Old Virginia fined the coal company $15,000. But wait, there's more. The company appealed the fine. Because corporations are people. Corporations are people too, my friends. Human beings. Wise, wise words of Bishop Willard Romney.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Ron Monkey up to Clanta says he wants the Secretary of the Department of Environmental Protection to use every available resource. Can't use the unavailable ones, like money. Lots of money. Or, say, you know, the death penalty. Those aren't available. As we alluded to during Friday on the Front Porch, I'm only surprised he didn't say, I want him to use all available resources with all deliberate speed to correct the problem. Or create a permanent solution. I'm going to take a minute here and engage in some silliness. Here's a permanent solution. What if we didn't leave toxic waste laying around in vast inland fucking seas and didn't allow them to exist? How's that for a permanent solution?
Oh, well, but that would affect American competitiveness because we can't lose out to the Chinese on the gypsum and phosphate. Oh, shut up.
That's where we are. And these things dot Florida. This is just one problem. Shouldn't we have the technology? Don't we have the technology to build a wastewater treatment plant of some sort
that will at least, I bet I know the answer to this question. The water's uncleanable. It's ruined forever on a planet that is a closed system. Ruined forever. Kind of like when Joe Manchin was, and he still is, all on board using coal to make jet fuel or rocket fuel or some such shit. Where you had to have, like, gallons of fresh water to be able to make a gallon of liquid coal fuel. And the water thereafter can never be water again. Because we don't want to lose our competitive edge. Mm-hmm. But this isn't just the fault of a bunch of Republican government officials. It's not the fault of years of Republican neglect. It is very much damned well the fault of every citizen of the state of Florida who ever voted for a Republican candidate for governor or a Republican member of their state legislature or a Republican mayor or a Republican county commissioner or, by God, a Republican dog catcher. This is what you get when you put Republicans in office. And frankly, there's just a lot of people who don't give a good goddamn. They're fine with it. It's okay. It's not a problem. Until it is. Well, hell. Jail ain't supposed to be nice anyway. You know, so much for those libertarian notions of the obligation. To see to the rights of those incarcerated because you stand functionally, in loco parentis. Yeah. What do you want to bet there's no bond? Of course not. I've got a note coming from Les. Les drives truck. I delivered pallets of some kind of fiber product used in cement manufacturing to Tampa a few years back. Tampa is a beautiful area, but mile after mile as the GPS guided me to the location of the plant, the population got darker and poorer, with some rednecks mixed in. The upper-middle-class whites with current-year Benzes and Beamers in driveways gave way to second-hand minivans and rusted pickup trucks parked in front of rented small-as-hell 1950s flats. In the middle of the hood is where the plant kicking up clouds of cement dust was located, and rinsing off the trucks and machinery into the ground, what didn't fly was, surprise, surprise. Though I haven't looked at it on a map, I'd bet this poison lake is not too far away. It's always closest to those who could afford the health problems the least that they locate this poisonous shit. Because, of course, because they can't fight back less. And if they do, you can rest assured there's some good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, pro-poison Christian Republican to say, now, we wouldn't want to negatively affect the economy. Because the people in those marginalized neighborhoods, well, they're not really like, you know, people. Because they can't fatten up a Republican politician's war chest. So, who's the moron here? Or who are the morons? like I said, the people who put the people in office, who let this shit lay around and become human rights nightmares. It's stories like this that make me hate the word environmentalism. Because it sounds like it's you know, I'm an environmentalist. Oh, yeah, I'm a Civitan. Yeah, you, I'm a Kiwanis. Uh-uh. These are human rights issues. That's why we came up with, that's why the term developed environmental justice. That's why I talk at the end of the program every night about Cold River Mountain Watch being a leader at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. There are similar organizations in Florida that have been worried about Piney Point for as long as Piney Point has been a problem. What is it with all this pee popping? And they have struggled. And they have worked in organizations that hang on by a shoe, by the last frayed, the strand of a dry rotted sneaker lace, and they take it home with them every night, and they get up with it, and they go to sleep with it, and they have breakfast with it, and lunch and dinner with it, and even when they're trying to enjoy themselves, it's with them. Because it ain't a job. It's a calling. But the folks who do the poisoning, well, the whistle blows, the job's over, they go home, they don't think about it, and, you know, oh well. Yeah. And they don't pay much in the way of taxes. Which brings us back to Dave number 11's note. I just got a subscription renewal notification for The Week magazine. The regular price of $555 for 52 issues had been slashed to $259. I didn't even have to ask for a discount. Considering the previous subscription was $99, I figured it was a small price to pay for weekly Firestarter. No free wristwatch or tote bag included, though. Needless to say, I canceled my auto-renewable subscription. Disney, Hulu, charges $5.99 a month to allow fast-forwarding through the ads on the DVR stuff. I predict that just around the corner is the unmutable television ad. Only $5.99 a month to restore mute to your God box. Maggots are just early adopters and not suckers, Robin. Get a clue. We ought to have to uncheck the singing aloud box on our monthly contribution to the horn. Only $11.99 extra for the benefit. No need explaining whether the box works checked or unchecked. Just charge $11.99 either way. Yeah, no, I'm no good at that. Don't have the heart for it. But I get it. I get it. Stop it, Robin, says Lee in New York. You can't have a Republican dog catcher. Dogs are like tribbles. They know whom they can trust. Yeah. Messaging again, Darlene in Connecticut writes. I think Democrats need to start screaming about how our infrastructure gives the corporations their wealth. It's the commons, roads, bridges, airways, railways, electricity, internet, the list goes on and on, that made the corporations wealthy, along with the massive tax breaks. Is it a stretch to think that, proportionately speaking, corporate murka has caused more wear and tear on our infrastructure than the everyday American has? I don't know. Have studies been done? Who the hell do these Dino Republican lights like Joe Manchin et al. Think they're fooling? I'm insulted that he thinks we're that stupid. Well, he does, Darlene. And he thinks it plays back here at home, and I guess it does. It plays with the people that matter. You know, the ones that write his campaign donation checks. I mean, no, let's remember that his precious daughter, Heather Bresch, with her
bogus baloney master's degree from my beloved alma mater, Harvard on the Mon. Well, she retired as head of Mylan Pharmaceuticals last year. And she retired with a bundle. But don't think for a minute that Joe is not still sitting around worrying himself into a, well, what passes for Joe for a frenzy. At the thought that Mylan Pharmaceuticals might actually have to pay a damn tax. Where would the share value go? How could they possibly compete? Oh, my daughters, my ducats. I bet he mutters that to himself. On the regular. Don't you? Yeah. So, wow. I have filler-obstered for an hour and 40 minutes. This is Conversation Radio. If you'd like to say something, if you've got another story, whatever, bring it to the community, to the congregation. No, the congregation's on Wednesday. But bring it. You know how. On Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, still working on correcting some of this stuff. Also into the Skype line, 304-574-8178. Or, you know, the stress line, 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN, and that gets you into the program. Because God knows I can't possibly hit it all. I won't hit it all. And there might be something out there that's eating you up that I don't otherwise get to. So, Conversation Radio is here for a reason. If you feel so inclined, what else? Well, speaking of morons, tomorrow we will be 3 months out, or 3 months past, the attack on the capital of the United States that too many people, mainstream for-profit media outlets among them, still refer to as a riot. That was no riot. We know that here. No. Well, now we have a little bit better idea of how that attack was viewed. That insurrectionist, seditious mob, fired, fueled, called, gathered by Nitwit Nero in an attempt to overthrow a democratic election. And by the way, yesterday being Easter, Nitwit Nero, I think they pulled it, but it was up for a little bit. 45 office issued a statement . Oh my heavenly days. In which he griped and groused
about the fake election
and went on and on and on, pissing and moaning about his loss. And then at the bottom,
other than that, happy Easter.
Right. Stunning. It shouldn't be. You should know by now, but it is. Can we get it together, Matt in San Francisco asks. Can we institute a tax on Amazon for every mile on every delivery van they run, then use that money to keep the roads drivable? That's what fuel taxes are supposed to do. But somehow or another, they wind up not doing it. And, you know, bridges collapse. Trains derail. Bomb trains blow up. Wastewater impoundments leak and fail. And all of these things require action by the Congress. And too many people in this country have sent too many Congress critters who have no interest in doing that. They're called Republicans. The same Republicans that we now know, 3 months past the attack on the Capitol, well, half of them still believe, and there's that most dangerous word in the English language again, still believe that the attack on the Capitol by people wearing American flag clothing, waving Trump flags, grunting and hooting and barking, Trump, were actually a bunch of lefty activists who were dressed up as maggots because they wanted to make Donald Trump look bad. Even though we have recorded video evidence to the contrary. Reuters and Ipsos put out a poll, did a poll on Nitwit Nero's continuing control of the Republican Party. Barbara Perry, professor and director of presidential studies at the University of Virginia's Miller Center, said he didn't just hijack the party, Trump. And I use the hijack term very deliberately because he's obviously not a party regular. He'd been a Democrat and he wasn't viewed as being a Republican or a part of the party. He hijacked or appealed to a whole segment of the population who are obviously open to those messages. And that part of the population is still open to those messages. It's not just the party that he hijacked, but he corralled and appealed to a whole segment of the population that's still holding firm with him because they're convinced that he's right. He taps into something that is visceral with them. And that applies to the Congress creeps as well. Of the half who think that it wasn't what it was, well, they believe, like I mentioned earlier, that it was actually secret Antifa in Trump drag, or that it was a nonviolent protest. No matter how many times you show them the video of the screaming police officers under attack, yeah, nonviolent. If the real nonviolent protests that this country has witnessed had become violent, people would have been mowed down in the streets. And in some cases were. Kent State. But the maggots, they're special snowflakes, right? Sure. And he's still, Nitwit Nero is still being given a bully pulpit to make false claims about the election. It was only a month ago on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda when he said,
right from the start, it was zero threat. Look, they went in. They shouldn't have done it. Some of them went in and they're hugging and kissing the police and the guards, you know. They had great relationships with the police that they fucking killed. No, I added that part. They had great relationships. A lot of the people were waved in, and then they walked in, and they walked out.
That's all it was. Don't believe your lying eyes. Your lying eyes are lying to you. Don't believe the cop lying on the ground, beaten half to death or sprayed with bear spray. He's lying to you, too, as he lies there, lays there. I always get those confused. Yeah, January 6th was free tour day. Didn't Trump say that they were welcomed in, brought their flags to show their patriotism, took pictures with the security and walked out? Yep. Are you going to believe Trump or your mainstream media lying videos? Precisely, Lee. Precisely. So let's bounce over to the stress line and see who's with us this evening. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Robin, it's Dave in the blind.
Hey, Dave, how are you?
Not good.
Oh, no.
I talked to Christine today. They did an in-depth examination and found no reason why she is blind. But she cannot see anything but light and shadow. And they don't know why. On the good side, my friend Jerry sent the powers of attorney, I believe. And I forwarded them to my sister-in-law so she could print them out and get them notarized. But Christine's upbeat. That's the good part. But I'm beginning to wonder how much of that is to make me feel at ease. I know my beloved well enough to know that she would do something like that. But I'm being patient. And I'm glad she's in a good spot emotionally. But they told my sister-in-law that she's going to require 24-hour nursing care.
Will she have that from the VA?
Yeah. Fortunately, the VA will pay for it because she's 100% service-connected disability anyway. So, and that kind of therapy and that kind of care is extremely expensive.
Oh, yes, it is.
If you went out and got that, that would cost you hundreds of thousands of dollars a year for the kind of care that she needs. And the downside is she probably won't be living in her brand new trailer for her with all of her stuff and her cats around her and all that. But who knows? It's like I told her, you learn as much as you can. She has been pushing herself, Robin. She has been pushing herself too hard. The nurses have warned her. She fainted this afternoon. She zoned out for about 20 seconds. And I told her, I said, honey, you gotta be careful doing that because that could just prolong, you know, how long you've got to stay in there. So, I don't know. I told my sister-in-law that I'm reserving Thursday for me because it's my birthday and I'm going to visit her on my birthday. We haven't missed a birthday together in 35 years. I'll be damned if I'm going to start now.
Absolutely.
I figure she's got to have some normalcy in her life, you know. Because she's like, oh, yeah, that's right. That's in a couple of days. Which tells me she's losing her days and nights because she has no visual markers.
That's a risk inside a hospital under almost any circumstance. You lose your ability to sort out your days and nights because you have no real ability to tell what is and isn't, especially in her circumstance.
Well, you know, they'll tell her it's breakfast or it's lunch or it's dinner. But they're all beginning to run together for her. And I've had friends who've lost their sight, and they say that's a common thing with somebody who's just lost their sight. I had a lawyer who was blind, and he could only see light and shadow. But they examined her eyes, and they cannot find any reason why she can't see. So I'm beginning to wonder if it might not be psychosomatic.
I think I'd be careful with that term.
By that, and I want to be very clear on how I'm using that term. It's not that she's intentionally pretending to be blind. It's that this may be the way her brain is dealing with it.
Yeah, it could be. It could be a psychological response to the trauma involved. Said the person who is not a psychologist and doesn't play one on the radio.
Well, I have been around enough psychologists and things to know that kind of thing does happen.
Well, I think there's a formal term for it.
I'm just hoping.
I think there's an actual acknowledged term for it, and I'm not crazy about the term, but I've heard it bandied about, and that is hysterical blindness.
Yeah, that has some sexist terms to it, too.
Oh, yes.
Because of the word hysteria, which comes from the Latin for womb.
I think it's Greek, but nothing to fight over.
Yeah, well, okay. But it has its roots in the feminine.
Yes.
In that, men cannot be hysterical, only women can be hysterical, that kind of thing. Freud was a big proponent of this kind of theory.
To this day, and I think it is finally maybe working its way out of the vocabulary, a hysterectomy.
Well, for example, up until like 5 or 6 years ago, the term mental retardation was used to describe in court papers and whatnot, in legal documents, someone with an intellectual disability.
And by the way, you're correct, Latin. I was wrong, Latin.
Yeah. I thought my year of Latin had served me in good stead, but but one of the few things that I can say that Greg Pence's little brother did right when he was governor was sign a law that required the state of Indiana to go through the statute books and remove references to mental retardation as a negative in the law. Intellectual disability or things like that could be a more accurate term that could be used in place of it. And this had come about because of the advocacy of the intellectually disabled people who objected to the use of the term. And so advocacy does help. I was listening earlier to the coverage of Major League Baseball deciding not to use Atlanta as a place to hold the All-Star game or the draft, and now the politicians are hooting and hollering about revoking baseball's status under the monopoly rules, declaring them an actual monopoly. But it's not like that's going to change anything for Major League Baseball. they expand the way they expand and have, and I don't see that there's going to be that much difference. I think the this is all a pig and a poke for the Republicans. They've got nothing except this kind of crap. I'd have more respect for them if they decided to just openly say, yeah, we don't have anything, but we're going to be upset about this. That at least would be direct. But, you know, God forbid they should actually say what they mean.
Well,
but that's, yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, how do you keep the rubes in line if they actually know what you're up to?
Well, as long as the rubes are told that they have a special place under God, and that at least they're not a black man, then you can pick their pocket all day long.
Yeah.
That's how you keep the rubes in line.
Sure. And Lee in New York. Lee in New York just sent a note along, Dave. Saying, tell Dave, it's better to not know the cause of the blindness that Christine presently has than to know that it is not repairable. I'm hoping they find a cause and it is ultimately fixable.
True. And the thing is, Christine has always been one to say, you know, adapt and overcome, you know. That has been her go-to for years. You know, accept, adapt, and overcome. So, she has been an inspiration to me over the years, and she still continues to be. But I have to be honest with you, Robin. I'm at one of the lowest points in my life.
I can hear it in your voice, Dave. I can hear it. This community stands with you.
I know.
And we know, and we know.
And I do have, I do have a message from Christine for you and the Horns. She sends her love. She said, "Tell Robin and the Horn, I love them."
We love her too.
And I told her I would. I know, Robin. And I'm thankful that
the family
are here.
I know something of the strain you're under, and I know you're trying to do everything in your power. Who is there for you, Dave? Who's helping look out for you?
Well, I have a small group of friends who are there for me. My therapist, who holds a PhD in psychology, I actually talk to a psychologist regularly, not just somebody with a master's of social work. And not that there's anything wrong with people that do that work.
No.
As, you know, holding a master's of social work, but at least with my therapist, he can get down deeper with me and look at me and say, now what's going on? You know, he is not above confronting me if he thinks it will bring something up for me to look at, handle, and deal with. And he's always good with, he tries to be good with a joke. I keep telling him not to give up the day job. Got two kids in college. you know. But I have a small group. My brother and sister and my dad, believe it or not, have been absolutely amazing. And my niece, Carissa, she's never been close to me because I was never around my family for the last 20 years very much. But she has been concerned about Christine, and she, because they went ziplining about 2 years ago. And my niece, Carissa, was just amazed at how Christine would approach the obstacles and just dive at them, you know, because it was sort of like, for Christine, it was sort of like being back in the Army in the confidence course. You know, there was a lot of climbing. She goes, if they got zip lines on the confidence course, they'd have never gotten me off of the confidence course. So the thing is, I'm wondering, you know, one of the things she's wanted to do, and I'm going to talk to the place where they went ziplining about seeing about getting adaptive equipment to help people with disabilities, you know, blind people, people with cerebral palsy, people with paralysis, that sort of thing, to go and do ziplining maybe with a tandem harness or something. And see what could be done, because I've read about water parks that have been purpose built for disabled people in mind. And when you're a small kid and you want to go on the water slide, but you can't because there are a lot of steps, that's a big deal. I mean, I think it's in Georgistan where there's a water park that's specifically built for disabled kids. They've got wheelchairs that are built to go into the water slide and into the pool. They'll float. So I'm going to talk to somebody about that. My sister has been asking me, because she knows Christine is a bookworm, if she's able to read books, and I'm going to have to call her and tell her, if you're going to get her a book, get her an audio book at the moment. You know, because boredom is her biggest fear right now. Christine's always been one to do and do for herself. Well, if she can do it, then yeah, we'll go and we'll get that done. She wants me to dig her old manual typewriter out so she can relearn to type. And that's possible with her. Even if she's blind, she can be retaught to type. I had a classmate who was blind who typed beautifully.
Well, the whole purpose of touch typing was to type without looking at the keyboard.
Right. I mean, he would write his entire quizzes and whatnot typing, and so you didn't have to sight read Braille, which I've tried a few times, and I am absolutely no good at it.
No, it's difficult.
But he worked. Yeah, and somebody asked my friend, who was the lawyer who had lost his sight later in life, if he ever used Braille, and he said the biggest problem with Braille for him is that he has the book in front of him and he tries to use his eyes to read instead of feeling the letters and the symbols on the page. So that could be a problem, but, I think I'm just glad she's still alive.
Absolutely.
I mean, And I am going to be spending my birthday with her, like I said.
Good.
And my sister-in-law, she's like, okay, Dave, I'll tell everybody that Thursday's your day. You go up and see her and spend the day with her. I'm like, great. That's fantastic. But I just, I'm hoping that she learns to do as much for herself as she can. Yeah, right now she needs the 24/7 nursing care. That's to be expected. Because she's in a whole new world for herself.
Yes.
And let me
ask you, have they begun talking about any kind of, have they begun talking about beginning rehab or, you know, any sort of physical therapy or?
They have started doing the physical therapy with her.
Good.
She's been overdoing it. That's one of the reasons she fainted. Was she's been overdoing it, and she doesn't know her limits. Well, it's one thing to push your limits, but she's consistently overdoing it. And the nurses are always warning her, Christine, you need to back off a little bit, you know?
She's probably not that good at the little bit stuff.
No, well, patience has never been one of her my beloved's virtues. So, you know, her prayer is, Lord, give me patience and give it to me now, kind of thing, you know? So.
Yeah.
I notice a knowing chuckle from you there, Robin. So. I mean, you understand what I'm talking about.
And yeah, sure. Yes.
I know that's a common prayer that, you know, rushes forth from my lips on a regular basis. So I can't really, you know, chide her for that. I can kind of look at her and say, yeah, honey, I definitely understand. But I did tell her the other day that she could no longer irritate me. And she goes, why? I said, well, you're not able-bodied anymore, so therefore you cannot irritate me because only able-bodied people irritate me. She goes, oh, I can find ways to irritate you. you know you've been with somebody long enough when you know that's going to be the next words out of your mouth. You know, when you've been with somebody as long as I have, or you've been with Agnes, you know darn well that she can bring you up short just as fast as she pleases if she wants to.
On a moment's notice.
And yeah. Yeah, there's no escaping it. There's no appeal. You can't file with a higher court. Because
sentences imposed immediately. Yes.
Yes, and I saw a cartoon that had an old man, an old woman looking out at her, an old man, and he's standing in front of the doghouse, and the dog goes, "Are you here for our nightly rate, or are you going to do the usual extended stay?" As he was checking into the doghouse. So, yeah, I've been there plenty of times with her. And I just, the one thing that bothers me is this idea of hers that if she loses enough of her physical abilities, that's a reason to call it quits. That's a real danger with her. And that's what scares me the most, Robin. And that's going to take time. That's why when she overdoes it. She tried to scratch her nose yesterday and kept hitting herself in the forehead. And I said, well, you're living with the palsy punch, which is a Josh Blue joke. I'll let you guys look up. But and Josh Blue has cerebral palsy. Basically, the idea is, in a fight, he doesn't know where, nobody knows where the next punch is going to come from him, and neither does he, as he ends up hitting himself in the face. So, but my biggest fear is that depression will set in to the point where, and I'm hopeful that that's not going to happen, that she becomes suicidal. But there's enough of a past with her and I that if I begin to see signs of it, or if she starts feeling signs of it, she will tell somebody. And at least at the VA, her psychologist is there, the psychiatrist that she's been working with are there. These are people that know her for decades. And I'm sure they will be reaching out to her and going, okay, Christine, this is just another chapter of your life. How are we going to, you know, approach this? You know, and I think she's almost ready to give the dogs up, as long as she knows that they'll either be therapy dogs or assistance animals. As long as they're out there lending a paw, she's fine with it. So.
Well, might she need her own canine assistant?
She might. And if her walking becomes good enough, she may actually need to get like a seeing eye dog or another type of assistance animal. I understand now they're teaching some of the seeing eye dogs how to pick things up off the floor or open screen doors or, you know, things like that around the house. We had an assistance dog at one time. She was a retired assistance dog, our dog Penny. And Christine had tied a towel to the refrigerator door. Well, for Penny, when Penny was young and she was trained as an assistance dog, that was her cue that she could open a refrigerator for a human. And then we were living with four dogs and four cats. Christine tied a towel to the refrigerator door, not thinking, and we had a 50-pound Virginia ham
got
absconded with. Oh yes. Fortunately, they didn't get much of it, and we were able to cut off a good chunk of it. But Christine was livid. There was sufficient scolding for a lot of fuzzy butts that day, especially Penny. But Penny didn't get it nearly as bad when she realized that Mom had left the towel where Penny would know to open the door. So Christine went back and apologized to Penny and said, okay, well, that one was my fault because I told you that you could open the door. So, yeah. We had this beautiful Virginia ham that we had gotten at Walmart. I mean, it had the rind on it and everything. And we were going to cut that back for Easter dinner one year. And the rest of it that was there, I mean, this was a $70 ham. Because we bought it whole and Christine baked it whole. But you can imagine, if that had been another 4 or 5 hours, there would have been nothing left. The four dogs, oh, they would have been happy puppies.
It reminds me of the old man's turkey being stolen in A Christmas Story. Bumpuses! Darren McGavin.
But Christine had no... Darren Gavin. I hadn't heard that name.
And of course, that is... The film is set in Indiana.
I never actually watched it all the way through. I've seen bits and pieces of it. I've seen the Lego lamp scene and where Ralphie gets his tongue stuck to the flagpole.
Well, the Bumpuses, the next door neighbors, were transplants from West Virginia, of course.
Of course.
And they had an entire pack of mongrel dogs who got in and stole them.
And of course, but like in Indiana, it's hard to tell where some folks are from because we got a lot of people from West Virginia. We got a lot of people from Kentucky. There is a difference in the way people speak in Indianapolis and north and south of I-40. In Indiana, you'll hear a voice from southern Indiana that sounds like it should be northern Kentucky. And that's, you can tell when somebody's from south of 40 by the way they talk. I've had people here tell me I sound like I'm from the East Coast. And I said, no, my great-grandmother was a teacher, and she was a stickler for, proper word usage. She, anytime as a child I'd use the word ain't, she would jump my shit.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And she pronounced that was not actually a word, which was, frankly, bullshit, but she did not want to hear me use that kind of language. And my grandmother was from a fairly well-to-do background, so I have a feeling that had a lot to do with it. And my grandfather, her son, was the same way. When I would use a vernacular, or I would use ain't, or I would use an expression that he found distasteful, boy, the hand of God came down upon me so fast it wasn't funny.
Oh, I have no doubt. No, the use of the word ain't in my family when I was a kid was responded to viscerally.
Oh, yeah.
I could see my mother shudder. I mean,
that's the difference I see.
She didn't even like it on TV. Might as well have been cussing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, my that's the way my grandmother used to treat it. And I was loath to ever use it anywhere in her presence. Even if I might be in her presence. Like if she was back in the kitchen with my grandmother or something and they were talking, because she had been a school teacher in her younger days. And I don't know if it was, some enhanced teacher hearing and she would come down on me like a ton of bricks, I taught you, I taught you to talk better than that. And that was a real thing. And I tell that story to my nieces and nephews, and they look at me like I'm from another planet. Because to them, that kind of language is not, or if they corrupt some other words in the language, that's normal for them. Whereas it will grate on me like anything.
Oh, there are things that just go through me like a dose of salt. Words.
And well, I actually was teaching my niece. She was studying for her GED, and there was a there's a essay portion to the test to see how well you write. And now this is my sister's, now this is Christine's oldest brother's daughter, his youngest child. And she would use the word nigga. And I jumped her shit about it. And in the St. Martin's Handbook, which was put out by St. Martin's Press to teach lowly college students how to actually write and cite things. And it was a manual of style, basically. It had a copy of the original letter from the Birmingham jail with all of its corrections as Dr. King was going through it. And you could see how his thought processes were working. So I had her read that and then write an essay as if she were writing it to me, but I was a foreigner and I didn't understand the history of that word. And years later, she goes, "That was bullshit. And if I'd said that to you, would I still have to do it?" And I said, "Yes." You still would have had to have done it. If you were going to use that language, you were going to learn its history before you could utter it again. And one of my white friends used something similar, and she pinned his ears back. And this was about a year and a half afterward. She said, "Uncle David made me write an essay on it. And if I can't get away with using that word, you're not going to get away with it." And I tell you the truth, Robin, I was so proud of her. She had learned her lesson whether she wanted to or not. But that's the kind of thing my great-grandmother would have done. Oh, there were times she made me write stuff out, you know. I guess once you're a teacher, you know, write this 100 times is kind of the go-to default thing.
I've written some things 100 times.
Yeah. Yeah, and I bet you still remember them to this day.
Yeah, kind of do.
Repetition, repetition.
Indeed.
But yeah, that's basically what I called to talk about today.
Well, just keep telling her that she's got a lot of people rooting for her, behind her, and implore her It may seem vacuous. It may seem meaningless, but it isn't. That we want her not to give up. That we want her to know that she can tap into her own spirit, and things will get better.
Yeah,
I mean, it's hard to say that in a situation like hers, but the thing is, we know they don't get better if she does give up. I mean, that's
right. Right. And I told her, I said, it's just like when her uncle had Alzheimer's. There were some days when he could think as clear as a bell, and the next he couldn't recognize his own wife. You know, And she's getting to an age where I think she's afraid that's going to happen to her. Or that people will forget her. Well, I know for my part, that's not going to happen. Not unless I suffer a brain injury and I can't recognize her. But like my side of the family have all reached out if they're, you know, if there's anything we can do, and it's not one of these, well, thoughts and prayers. I mean, the thoughts and prayers, if you're actually putting thought into the prayer, that's fine. Chris is far more religious than I ever will be, but if that helps her get through, beautiful. Just as absent-minded, well, I'm praying for when you know they're not. Well,
from where I stand, it's a matter of, what does that even mean?
Yeah. I mean, if you're being thought of, but then again, I've had people who have called me, like,
you know, when COVID Caligula said, you know, when COVID Caligula said, you know, our thoughts and prayers are with you. Really? Does anybody believe that he turned around and walked back into the residence and dropped to his knees and hollered up to the oh, dear Jesus, please, no, come on.
Well, he would have left me at thoughts, let alone prayers. I mean, does anybody honestly believe that Donnie Dumbass would have been thinking at all?
No, he just sits around being ruled by his id.
I mean, the guy is, if you want to look up reactionary, that Donald J. Trump's smiling little Mussolini chin is right there next to the word. You know. Oh, I had to talk to my brother this weekend, and he made a comment about the, you know, his time in the military. This isn't what I swore to defend the, and I'm quoting him here, the Bill of Rights. And I'm like, well, you realize there are more amendments than just the Bill of Rights. I pointed out that at least one of the other amendments was adopted 200 years after it was originally submitted. It's known now as the 27th Amendment. But because there was an original Bill of Rights, there was the idea that in order for Congress to get a pay raise, they would have had to have gone back home and faced the voters.
Right, so just make it automatic.
Right. And that had been in the original Bill of Rights. It was never ratified, but it was brought back and resubmitted to the states back in the, I believe, in the 80s or early 90s. And that was the last time the Constitution was amended. I mean, it is so rare to amend the Constitution. There are plenty of constitutional amendments out there. I think I saw a website, there were over 250 amendments to the Constitution, but so few have been ratified. The list of the ones that didn't get ratified are actually much, much longer. And on this website that I saw, and I wish I could remember where it was, there were fugitive slave amendments that were presented prior to the Civil War, obviously, but that they had, that there were obviously slaveholding states that wanted to protect their right to slavery by constitutional amendment. And that is where the current Republicans, who, by the way, would have been the Democrats in the Civil War, got the idea of anything that they actually wanted to last beyond two terms in office would have had to have been done by a constitutional amendment. That's why you get this bullshit flag-burning amendment and all this kind of crap that's been floating around for forever. Most people don't realize that, you know, how we generally treat the flag is by tradition and not by law.
Sure. You know, the American Legion has a flag code.
Right. But there are official regulations about how a flag is to be displayed, how it's even supposed to be disposed of. And there's no one way to do it. There's a Eagle Scout here in Indiana who made a fire pit specifically so that the community could ceremonially burn a worn-out flag when it was time to retire it. When it had become so tattered and was beyond repair that there was a respectful way for them to dispose of it. And I was struck by that when these Trumpantees were going out in their white SUVs and tacking flags on 2x4s in the back and then running down the street to make them fly stiff in the breeze. One guy had a flag bunched up in the window. And I was like, you goddamn idiots. You want to say, well, I respect the flag when, you know, I had been in the JROTC. I had been in the Boy Scouts.
Yeah, look at what happened January the 6th. I got a story here. In front of me, Dave.
Hold on a second, Robin.
Yeah, go ahead.
Who is it? Huh? Okay, hold on a second. Robin, I've got a gun.
Yeah, take care of it, Dave. Take care of it, my friend. Keep me updated
later,
so I can keep the community updated, all right? Take care, my friend.
I will.
Bye now.
Goodbye.
Tough days for Dave, and tough days even tougher for Christine. Just keep them both in your thoughts. I wish I was the praying kind, but I'm not. Never seen it do much good. And in fact, there was a story, oh God, years ago, probably 15 years ago, 16 years ago. Somehow or another, researchers managed to study the impact of prayer upon people who were sick, injured, what have you. And it turned out saying, I'm praying for you, was more deleterious to their well-being than the people who didn't say that to them. It creates unreasonable expectations, things like that. I think it was too long ago to really remember the details. And ever since then, I've been very, I don't say that. I try to find other ways to say things differently. So do keep them in your thoughts, please. What I was about to tell Dave, he was talking about, you know, flag conduct and whatnot. There were people January 6th, as I mentioned earlier, who were festooned in flag clothing. And, of course, that wasn't a problem because they were, you know, maggots. But I got a story here that's disturbing. I mean, the line itself, is the speech attributed to this participant in the attacks of January 6th is horrifying. One of the insurrectionists is named Jack Wade Whitten, W-H-I-T-T-O-N. And people who've been going over the videos, you know, sleuthing this, were the ones who identified him. He is from Georgia, of course. He was identified as wearing a unique gray scalloped backpack. And I don't necessarily know, but he became known, his nickname became Scallops among the people who were trying to sort out his identity. And he was arrested last week, finally, once identified. He had on his Trump 2020 hat and was actively, you know, contrary to what COVID Caligula says, he was actively involved in not being nice to the police officers. What I mean by that is that he attacked a police officer with an aluminum crutch, and then he dragged a Capitol officer down a set of Capitol steps by his neck, and then bragged about it. Yeah. One of the people who turned him in or identified him to the FBI had gone to high school with him, Jack Wade Whitten, and went to the same CrossFit gym as Jack Wade Whitten and his girlfriend. This informant remains confidential to the FBI. And in turning him in, he provided, the informant did, a text message that Jack Wade Whitten sent to a mutual acquaintance of theirs, which he had gotten hold of. And in the text message, there's a photograph of a bloody hand. Remember, he dragged him down a set of stairs into the mob. And Jack Wade Whitten is alleged to have texted this mutual acquaintance, "This is from a bad cop. Yeah, I fed him to the people. I don't know his status. And I don't care, to be honest." Well, he was arrested last week, as noted, after he was identified. He's being held pending trial. He has been indicted in federal court. And then, because of the way federal criminal procedure goes and because of the Constitution, since he's not charged with murder, he's entitled to what the Constitution refers to as a reasonable bail. And so there was a hearing last week, an arraignment, and the U.S. magistrate judge, which is a step below a district judge, the magistrates in the federal system handle things like arraignments, and they, you know, the preliminary matters, as opposed to motion practice and discovery and
the trial itself, that kind of thing. And in this case, the magistrate judge is one Regina Cannon. And after he was charged and taken into custody, Regina Cannon, the magistrate judge, ordered this guy released. Well, it turns out, and anything that happened between the years 2017 and 2000 and January 20, 2021, especially in maggot states, are suspect to me. Because there's too much of an opportunity for political skullduggery to be taking place. And the district judges select the magistrates. And so on January 27th, 2020, Thomas W. Thrash Jr., the chief United States district judge for the Northern District of Georgia, issued a statement. On behalf of the judges of the Northern District of Georgia, I'm pleased to formally announce the selection of Ms. Regina D. Cannon to join our court as a United States Magistrate Judge. On February 3rd, 2020, Ms. Cannon will assume the position to be vacated by Magistrate Judge Janet F. King upon Judge King's retirement on January 31st, 2020. Ms. Cannon received both her Bachelor of Arts degree and in English and Political Science and her Juris Doctor from the University of Oklahoma, where she was the recipient of several awards and recognitions. She has a long and distinguished career of public service in the legal community, including most recently 18 years of exceptional service as a trial and appellate attorney with the Federal Defender Program in Atlanta. Regina's proven dedication to public service and her extensive legal experience make her a superb addition to our stellar bench of magistrate judges and will allow her to continue her service to the community. And this is the person who moved to turn loose a man who told people, bragged to people, I fed him to the people. He threw him to the mob, this Capitol Police officer. And so now U.S. Attorney's Office is appealing her decision, turning this guy loose back into the community, saying that he's a danger to the public. And they want him held incarcerated until trial. And it doesn't seem like a bad idea. And you wonder where Magistrate Cannon got the notion that anyone who was involved in that display, that insurrectionist display of treason, should be walking at large in society. Prosecutors have filed a motion for an emergency stay, and they're asking a judge in the District of Columbia to order that Jack Wade Whitten be held until trial. Like I said, you wouldn't think that somebody who had an 18-year career as a federal public defender would be a maggot, but there's no guarantee. And there's a remark inside this Huffington Post article where is it here? There it is. It would be more than a month before the FBI interviewed the owner of the CrossFit gym they attended, who identified Wade to the FBI on February 25th. As Huffington Post has previously reported, the overwhelmed FBI has been struggling to keep up with the influx of tips it has received about the Capitol attack, and key information has been overlooked during the course of the investigation. that phrase leapt off the screen at me. The overwhelmed FBI has been struggling to keep up with the influx of tips. Well, that's because there were a couple of thousand people involved in the attack on the Capitol. And there are a lot of patriotic Americans who want to identify these people and see that action is taken. But it also speaks to the fact that if they're overwhelmed, we need some manner of providing them relief and assistance. And I come back to the idea of special counsel. I don't know if anybody else is talking about this. Besides me, but it would seem to be more and more a valid idea. Yeah, no shit. Brother Deacon Asa says, it's totally cool for white supremacists to lynch police officers as long as it was a sincerely held lynching. Oh, yeah. Sincerely held... Well, that's a phrase that's bitten us in the ass over the years, isn't it? Well, it's a sincerely held belief. But in their pleadings, the prosecutors argued to the court that Jack Wade Whitten does pose a danger to the community and that there were no conditions of release that would reasonably assure the safety of the community. From their filing, they write, the defendant assaulted an officer with a weapon, a crutch, and while doing so, kicked another officer who had been forced to the ground by a separate rioter. The defendant then dragged the officer he assaulted with a crutch into the mob, pulling him by the head in a prone position down a flight of steps. The evidence shows that the defendant is a danger to the community. Jesus. And yet the magistrate said, no, you just go on home, okay? You be good now. Wouldn't it be nice if George Floyd had just been sent on home? And George Floyd wasn't a danger to the community. And in testimony today, we heard more about just how awful Derek Chauvin's conduct was. The police chief of Minneapolis offered, well, not shocking, but still surprising to hear a police chief testifying against one of his own. Chief Madaria Arredondo described Derek Chauvin's use of force, and remember, there are multiple cases of unnecessary use of force against Derek Chauvin, but the jury are not allowed to hear it. But he said that it was absolutely a violation of the MPD policies, as well as a violation of his oath, when Derek Chauvin knelt on George Floyd's neck for more than 9 minutes. He failed to follow policies on de-escalation, use of force, and offering medical aid to those in need. Once Mr. Floyd had stopped resisting, and certainly once he was in distress and trying to verbalize that, that should have stopped the use of force, that is. Clearly, when Mr. Floyd was no longer responsive and even motionless, to continue to apply that level of force to a person proned out, handcuffed behind their back, that in no way, shape, or form is anything that is set by policy, is not part of our training, and is certainly not part of our ethics or values. And yet, somehow, it happened. just happened. His testimony continued, "When I look at the facial expression of Mr. Floyd, that does not appear in any way, shape, or form that it is light to moderate pressure." That harkened back to Friday when a 35-year veteran detective, head of the homicide division, said that the use of force that Chauvin performed against George Floyd was totally unnecessary. So there seems to be no question, and one wonders how the defense gets out of this. Of course, Chief Arredondo had said back in June of last year, "George Floyd's tragic death was not due to a lack of training. The training was there. Chauvin knew what he was doing. What happened to Mr. Floyd was murder." And as the Washington Post points out, it is exceedingly rare for a police chief to testify against one of his own. Back to January 6th as we wrap things up this evening. Jeremy in Vermont says, "I want to know what happened to the shitbag that wore the 6MWE shirt into the Capitol." In neo-Nazi white supremacist lingo, 6MWE stands, as Jeremy points out, for 6 million wasn't enough. Christ. And so, thanks again to Darlene for answering Joey and Giraffe's challenge. Things have been quiet pretty much all evening. Maybe that's what happens when I fill a lobster. So we will come into tomorrow's program at 580 to get even with Tuesday. 3 for tomorrow, 280 for this evening. Unless something changes overnight with the overnight crew. So thanks, Darlene. Thanks, Joey. And thanks to all of you who, with your subscriptions via PayPal and Patreon, in which we do not pre-check the box, are partial sponsors of the program and help keep it on the air. Thanks to all of our a la carte contributors who do the same. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thanks to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Brand new, fresh Malloy on the way, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. About an hour away now. Best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is at headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. A great reason for you to reach out to your member of Congress and ask them to co-sponsor H.R. 2073, the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Act, is the existence of the massive multi-billion-gallon toxic waste impoundments in central Appalachia. Sooner or later, we have to deal with those before there's a collapse imminent warning that evacuates a community around here, just as is happening in Manatee County, Florida, as we speak. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe. Stay home when you can. When you have to go out, wear your mask, double mask, wear your gloves. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, carry your hand sanitizer everywhere you go, and for God's sakes, when you can. When you can. Well, get your vaccine. It's still a struggle in many places in this country. There's a lot of ballyhoo about how the vaccinations are rolling out, but there are people all over this country who are struggling trying to find one. And for God's sakes, of course, maintain your social distance. And if somebody comes towards you saying, "Yeah, I fed him to the people," avoid that person like the plague. Because he is. Later.